Over the course of the next two studies, we are going to concentrate on the first nine chapters of the book of Proverbs, which together form the prologue to the book. Prologue just means a word at the start. So it's quite a lengthy word at the start. It's almost a third of the book. But let me just remind you quickly how the book of Proverbs fits together. The first seven verses of chapter one form the introduction to the book. And in those verses, we have the book's title in verse 1, the Proverbs of Solomon, son of David, king of Israel. From verse 2 to 6, we have the purpose of the book, which just says it in so many different ways. The purpose of the book is to make you, the reader, wise. And then in verse 7 of chapter 1, we have the motto of the book, the all-important motto of the book. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, but fools despise wisdom and discipline. Now, after that little introductory section, chapter 1, verses 1 to 7, we then have these nine chapters, which are a series of lectures, speeches that the father is making to his son or to his sons. Read those chapters and you will just notice again and again and again, my son, my son, my son. It's an appeal from the father to the son to listen and to take on his instruction. Now, it is only when we have heard these lectures that we've passed through this lengthy prologue, only then are we ready to enter into the hundreds of wise sayings that are recorded from chapter 10, verse 1, to the end of the book. The first thing we're going to do tonight is to spend some time on the motto of the book. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, but fools despise wisdom and discipline. As I said last time, Proverbs is not simply a compilation of good advice and general instruction for living. It is not less than that, but it is a lot more than that. Everything that Proverbs has to be said is to be understood through that one statement. And its positioning at the end of the little introductory session in chapter 1, verse 7, its positioning there as we enter into the lengthy chapters of prologue, that is very deliberate. It is, in effect, chapter 1, verse 7 is the turnstile that we must pass through in reading the book of Proverbs. And as we continue to read on in the book, we discover that the fear of the Lord is the air we breathe throughout. So that begs the question, doesn't it? What does it mean to fear the Lord? Now, over the years, I have read many good, helpful definitions and descriptions of what it means to fear the Lord. But I have to be honest and say, I've never really been able to improve on the one that Reuben gave me as a youngster, when I had the three older boys, as they were then, and I asked them the question. We were thinking about this verse. And I said, boys, what do you think it means to fear the Lord? And Reuben piped up and just said one phrase, which I've never forgotten. It means to give God his place. And, you know, the more you sort of unpack and deconstruct that phrase, I think it really captures what it involves. To fear the Lord is to give him his place. One technical point that is worth noting is that it is to fear the Lord. And if you've got a good translation of the Bible, you will notice that the word Lord there is in small capital letters. Now, that is the translator's way of alerting you that the name for God here is, as we would say in English, Jehovah, which is the translation of the Hebrew Yahweh. That is the covenant name of God, the God who makes covenant and keeps covenant with his people. It is the one true, living, and sovereign Lord who has revealed himself to Israel, who has entered into covenant with Israel. This is not the general name for God that the heathen would also use, Elohim. You see, the fear of the Lord is not a general sort of vague, impersonal deference to some god or other out there. No, the fear of the Lord that the book of Proverbs is talking about is submission before the God who has made himself known to Israel. You see, the people who fear the Lord know the God they fear. This is not fear that flows from ignorance. This is fear that is grounded in revelation. It is an appropriate response to who the individual knows God to be. There are 20 references to the fear of the Lord in the book of Proverbs. And I would suggest to you that four things are emphasized. And these are vital to understand if we are to fear the Lord and to access that wisdom that God wants to give us for living our lives wisely. The first one is indeed that the fear of the Lord is the road to wisdom. Chapter 1, verse 7. Well, it's repeated again in chapter 9, verse 10. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. Chapter 15, verse 33 adds, the fear of the Lord teaches a man wisdom. It's so important that we do not confuse wisdom with IQ, you know, your intelligence quota. The book of Proverbs is not designed to make us smart, you know, so that we can impress our friends at the table quiz with our knowledge of the population of different countries. The book of Proverbs isn't interested in making you smart in that sense. It is designed to make us wise. Wisdom is the skill of living. It is insight and understanding. It's the ability to relate correctly to God, to other people, and to the creation around us. You don't require letters after your name to do that. Natural intelligence, brain power, it will not disqualify you from wisdom. But neither will it qualify you for it. Wisdom is found in a submissive relationship with God. The truly wise are those who acknowledge God's foundational role in their lives and in the world, and then live accordingly. So that's the first thing. The fear of the Lord is the road to wisdom. The second thing is that the fear of the Lord is a position and a perspective we adopt for our lives. It's a choice we make, and it's a principle and a policy we live by. It is said of fools in chapter 1, verse 29. They hated knowledge and did not choose to fear the Lord. You see, fearing the Lord is the deliberate rejection of our own wisdom. Chapter 3, verse 7. Do not be wise in your own eyes. Fear the Lord and shun evil. And it is a refusal to be swayed by those who do not fear God, irrespective of how much they appear to prosper in this life. Chapter 23, verse 17. Do not let your heart envy sinners, but always be zealous for the fear of the Lord. Be zealous for it. We do not stumble into fearing the Lord. It does not come naturally to us. It's not our default position. It is a deliberate act of submission, which we continue to renew every day of our lives. We choose to give our loyalty to God alone. We choose to live for an audience of one. The fear of the Lord is the road to wisdom. The fear of the Lord is a position and a perspective we adopt consciously for our lives. Thirdly, the fear of the Lord brings with it the rejection of evil. To come to fear the Lord is not only to make a mental decision, it is to assume a moral position. Chapter 8, verse 13. To fear the Lord is to hate evil. Chapter 14, verse 2. He whose walk is upright fears the Lord. Chapter 14, verse 16. A wise man fears the Lord and shuns evil. Chapter 16, verse 6. Through the fear of the Lord, a man avoids evil. The fear of the Lord is not some abstract, elusive concept. It shows itself through active separation from evil. Basically, it is the outworking of God's command to his people, be holy, because I am holy. And Peter takes that statement from Leviticus and quotes it in the New Testament as well. So this is an important point. Always remember that in the book of Proverbs, the wise are always the righteous. The wisdom that the fear of the Lord begets is an indivisible marriage of right thinking and right living. And these cannot be separated.
if we truly fear the Lord. Fourthly and finally for this section, the fear of the Lord leads to wonderful blessing. Chapter 10, verse 27. The fear of the Lord adds length to life. Chapter 14, verse 26 and 27. He who fears the Lord has a secure fortress, and for his children it will be a refuge. The fear of the Lord is a fountain of life, turning a man from the snares of death. Chapter 19, verse 23, the fear of the Lord leads to life. Chapter 22, verse 4, humility and the fear of the Lord bring wealth and honor and life. Chapter 28, verse 14, blessed is the man who always fears the Lord. Now, undoubtedly, Proverbs' focus is on this life and the tangible benefits that come through fearing the Lord. You know, Proverbs upholds the general expectation for life in the kingdom, ruled by its righteous king, under the terms of God's covenant with Israel. But you know, even in Proverbs, with that particular temporal, material focus, there are indications of a hope for the wise, for the righteous, that extends beyond the grave and this life altogether. Proverbs 11, verse 7 says, when a wicked man dies, his hope perishes. And the clear implication of that is that when a righteous man dies, his hope remains. Chapter 12, verse 28, in the way of righteousness, there is life. Along that path is immortality. Chapter 14, verse 32. When calamity comes, the wicked are brought down, but even in death, the righteous have a refuge. Now, it's only on our side of the coming of Christ that life and immortality have been brought to full disclosure through the gospel. That's what Paul says in 2 Timothy 1, verse 10. But even in the book of Proverbs, we find the same principle at work, that those who fear the Lord, who give God his place, who reject human wisdom, who turn from sin and reject evil, they can trust God for a blessed future with him. That light is there in the book of Proverbs, even if it does not burn with the clarity of the New Testament on the other side of the redemptive work of Jesus Christ. So we have paused to consider the importance of the book's motto, the fear of the Lord. What about the prologue then? These nine chapters, this series of lectures and speeches from the Father to his Son. You'll get that 19 times in those chapters. My Son, my Son, sometimes my Son. And if you read chapters 1 to 9 carefully, you'll see that there's actually two passages that are exceptions to this, where it's not the Father addressing his Son. In chapter 1, verse 20 to 33, and then actually all of chapter 8 and 9, in both those sections, it's not the Father speaking to his Son. It's actually a female voice that is speaking. Indeed, the primary reader, the immediate reader of the book of Proverbs, the young man on the brink of adulthood, he is addressed by two different women. And as we come to the close of the prologue, that is chapters 8 and 9, we find both these women issuing an invitation to the young man, to the reader, to enter their house and to dine at their table. But I must not run ahead. Before we get to the two women and the two invitations, we will be greatly helped in our understanding of these speeches of the Father if we identify what is the dominant image, the metaphor that is used throughout the prologue. And I want to just introduce this to you and encourage you to go from this. Now that this has been flagged up and emphasized for you, I want you to reread those chapters and see for yourself how this image runs through the nine chapters. And it's this: two paths, or two ways, or two roads are open to the Son. It amuses me greatly that the Hebrew word for path or road or whatever, which is used at least 25 times in these chapters, is the Hebrew word derek. D-E-R-E-K. Derek. So we have two Dereks in the prologue. So just listen now. I'm going to do a wee bit of reading of the book. Just listen to something of how the two alternative pathways through life are described. The Son must travel along one of them. Indeed, each of us must travel along one of these paths. So I'm going to read, first of all, chapter 2, and then we're going to read some verses in chapter 4. Proverbs chapter 2, the father starts by setting up his instruction to his son. My son, if you accept my words and store up my commands within you, turning your ear to wisdom and applying your heart to understanding, and if you call out for insight and cry aloud for understanding, and if you look for it as for silver and search for it as for hidden treasure, then you will understand the fear of the Lord and find the knowledge of God. For the Lord gives wisdom, and from his mouth come knowledge and understanding. He holds victory in store for the upright. He is a shield to those whose walk is blameless, for he guards the course of the just and protects the way of his faithful ones. Then you will understand what is right and just and fair, every good path. For wisdom will enter your heart, and knowledge will be pleasant to your soul. Discretion will protect you, and understanding will guard you. Wisdom will save you from the ways of wicked men, from men whose words are perverse, who leave the straight paths to walk in dark ways, who delight in doing wrong and rejoice in the perverseness of evil, whose paths are crooked and who are devious in their ways. It will also save you from the adulteress, from the wayward wife with her seductive words, who has left the partner of her youth and ignored the covenant she made before God. For her house leads down to death, and her paths to the spirits of the dead. None who go to her return or attain to the paths of life. Then you will walk in the ways of good men and keep to the paths of the righteous. For the upright will live in the land and the blameless will remain in it, but the wicked will be cut off from the land and the unfaithful will be torn from it. See this image of the two alternative pathways. Turn over to chapter 4, please. We're going to read from verse 10 to 19 and then verse 26 to finish. Listen, my son, accept what I say, and the years of your life will be many. I will guide you in the way of wisdom and lead you along straight paths. When you walk, your steps will not be hampered. When you run, you will not stumble. Hold on to instruction. Do not let it go. Guard it well, for it is your life. Do not set foot on the path of the wicked or walk in the way of evil men. Avoid it. Do not travel on it. Turn from it and go on your way. For they cannot sleep till they do evil. They are robbed of slumber till they make someone fall. They eat the bread of wickedness and drink the wine of violence. The path of the righteous is like the first gleam of dawn, shining ever brighter to the full light of day. But the way of the wicked is like deep darkness. They do not know what makes them stumble. Verse 26. Make level paths for your feet and take only ways that are firm. The son faces a choice. Will he choose to walk along the path that leads to life, that his father has instructed him in? Or will he turn to the dark and crooked paths that lead to death? What a message for our young people brought up in the community of faith. And how we feel the pain of watching the destructive, self-harming choices of those who turn aside from the way of wisdom and life to take the way of foolishness and death. How we feel the pain of that. May we be faithful guides who lead well along the way of life for all who follow behind. May we truly fear the Lord and lead in the way everlasting. In our next study, we will meet the two women in the prologue and hear their invitation to come and dine and consider the two banquets that are on offer.